Welcome to the Land Investing Business Secret Podcast, where each short episode, we talk about the strategies, experiences, and the tools to help you launch, grow, and scale your land business. Learn how to find freedom within your own business, find out ways to build consistency in your processes, and hear how other everyday land investors are winning so you can get to the next step closer to building your dream life through your land business. And I'm your host of the Land Investing Business Secrets Podcast by Pebble, Jesse Kwong. Hey, how's it going? It's Jesse here of the Land Investing Business Secrets Podcast. I have a special guest who is in a very specific area of land investing, specifically cold calling. I've had a cold call guest before, but Joe here, I met him last year. He went through the Dirt Hacker Challenge with me. And it's great to see how much he was, you know, experimenting, trying different things. And that led to another thing and another thing. And here he is now. He's an expert in cold calling specifically for land. So I'm sure you're going to get tons out of this episode here. So enjoy this episode here with my good friend, Joe Roberts. All right. How's it going, everybody? I've got Joe with me. Joe, how are you doing?
Great. Thanks, Jesse.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, we met like last year. You came out to the Dirt Hacker Challenge that we were doing last year. And now here you are. Things have like completely skyrocketed for you. I'm so excited to just jump in your story and talk about what you've been up to. And let's talk about how. Tell us your journey as how, you know, if you can give us a cold notes of how you sort of got into land and what you've been doing since then.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, it's definitely been a whirlwind year. It's been almost exactly a year since we met in February of 23. I'd been in land since fall of 21 at that point. But, you know, so February of 23, I was transitioning out of the Marine Corps. I was on terminal leave. And as a result, I had just hired my first VAs for my land business. And I was really looking to start scaling since it was going to be what it is, you know, my full-time job, no longer getting that government paycheck. So, you know, I was looking to build, you know, my systems and processes as it was going from more or less a side hustle that I had done well, active duty in the Marine Corps, into full-fledged business. I need to support my five kids and wife. So that was a year ago. And I think I remember talking with you. I definitely know I talked about it in the group, but you know, I'd been searching for a few months for an additional lead generation source off of, instead of direct mail, or to, at the time I was looking for something to really complement direct mail. Cause I was no longer seeing the returns I had seen like my first year or so in the business. Sure. And at the time actually I did the Dirt Hacker Challenge with you guys. I was in the process of doing some testing with cold calling internally, using one of my VAs and myself to cold call. So also, you know, I did that for a few weeks, and I realized, hey, this isn't really it's working, but it's not efficient. And I didn't particularly like spending all my time cold calling. And so I tried to find a real estate cold calling company that I felt would do exactly what I wanted for my land business. Couldn't find one. So I launched my own cold calling company, Land Caller, and kind of built that as I was also scaling my land business up and, you know, adding employees to my land business and that sort of thing. So over the past year, it's definitely been a whirlwind. I've basically been, you know, building my land business up while simultaneously building this service business for land investors, which of course my land business was the first client of it. And, you know, discovering a lot about cold calling as a lead generation method along the way. So,
and that's what we're going to dig into with you today. And I've had somebody on in the past, you know, talk about cold calling, but you know, you're coming from a land perspective. So I'm really excited to talk to you about that. But, you know, you started off doing it yourself. So what are some of the, like, before you started building out your service, and of course, we'll talk a little bit more about that. But, you know, what are some of the, you know, big things that you learned early on doing it yourself?
I mean, so when I was doing it myself, it was, first of all, very, very rudimentary. And what I mean by that, it was like, you know, I had markets that I knew well from mailing that I had bought and sold a number of properties in. I just knew I wanted to be in these markets. And when I it was like literally like find individual properties that I was like, oh yeah, I'd like that in the GIS, use a skip tracing, free skip tracing software to find a number and then like dial them from my personal phone. Like that's how it started. You know, and the first thing that really like stuck out to me about it was like, oh, I'm getting leads from people that never responded to mailers. That I knew had gotten mailers because I had sent them mailers, but they were picking up the phone and talking to me. And so I remember being like, wow, that's weird. Like I've sent these people blind offers. I've sent neutral letters. I've sent ranged offers and I never got a response. And now the very first time I try to call them, they're picking up the phone and then, you know, I'm under contract a week later. And so it was like, okay, there's like this subset of owners out there that are not going to respond to mailers and they're not going to respond to texting. And it's a Venn diagram, right? Like there's overlap amongst all of them, but there's definitely some there that the only way you might get them is cold calling. And so that kind of like that realization that sparked, it was like, okay, like have I found like a strategic advantage within the land flipping niche here? And I felt like I had.
So I guess why did you decide to explore cold calling, you know, as this, you know, next channel that you wanted to tap into? Why not mass texting? Why not ringless voicemail? What led you to cold calling?
So a few things. So first of all, I did do texting. At the same time I was cold calling, I was also experimenting with texting. Mm-hmm. And I picked texting and cold calling as kind of the two that I would try to, you know, as I was still mailing at the time, to discover. What led me to cold calling initially was essentially going back, looking at, okay, who are the people that respond to my mailers? Mm. Who is my standard seller of properties that I'm buying from? They're older in general. Some of like they're responding to mail, which like Gen Z and Gen X don't. So like they're older, they're more used to like older traditional forms of communication. You know, and I had plenty of instances in the direct mail game where it was like, okay, like we get the contract, maybe we have to adjust the price or something for my blind offer. And I try to go send them something for e-signature and they're like, oh, I don't have an email, right? Or I'm like trying to text with them and I'm getting back in touch with them, but it's only via landline. So it's like, okay, maybe my target seller is not going to respond to SMS, or at least a subset of that population is not going to respond to this SMS. So to me, it was like, it felt like a good fit with the type of people I had been buying land from. And a better fit overall than texting in a lot of ways. Texting definitely has its place. But there is something to be said for knowing exactly who you're going after. So, and then the other thing that kind of, and I wouldn't say I knew this at the time, but I discovered pretty quickly was that cold calling is like well established, right? In the US, like it's been a thing for decades, probably since phones were invented. But in terms of specifically when you get into like regulations and the laws surrounding it and the how the industry is regulated, it's a kind of like all the ground rules have pretty much been laid. And yes, there's from time to time, like kind of tweaks and stuff, but everybody kind of knows the where the fences stand and like what you can and can't do. And it's not some new technology. There's new technology that comes and changes it some, but it doesn't change like the name of the game. Mass texting and ringless voicemail are still very much, even though it feels like, especially to like millennials and younger, it's been around forever. In reality, as a lead gen marketing method, it hasn't, especially when you compare to like how bureaucracy, government bureaucracy catches up to what markets do. And so I think we saw this honestly with like this past year with texting is that, the technology always shoots ahead of the government and then the government catches up. And what I realized was like, there is the significant, like, as I started to like really dig into like what was happening, I realized that there's probably some, and I was accurate in my assessment that there's probably some significant changes coming to how we conduct texting and ringless voicemails the legality of it or the regulations that'll be put in place. Mm-hmm. Just because of that natural like catch up from the government to what the market's doing. And you don't really see that as much with cold calling because it has been so established.
Right, right. It's just a much more, I guess, mature channel of marketing. You know, I want to ask you something that like, this is me being selfish, but just a really question out there. Well, I've hopped on calls before, and sometimes you end up getting somebody who just is sharing their life story with you, and it's just going and going and going. I feel like you guys in the cold calling area, you guys would know how to handle. And how do you, this is just one thing that always sticks out to me about phone calls that I always remember. Like, oh gosh, I have to go through their life story with them. How do you guys handle that? I know it's sort of a random question, but it's sometimes.
No, it's actually a great question. So what I would say is like, there's a big difference between that kind of call on a cold call and that kind of call with a lead. Okay. I am perfectly happy to hear your life story about the land that and anything else you want to talk about. If I think that there's a nice deal waiting for me at the end as I've built some rapport and, you know, even if it's going to take me 5 calls, if I, you know, if there's a nice contract to be had at the end of it, let's do it. I'll learn your kids' names and let's get down. And I've landed enough contracts at this point to know that that is very viable way of, yes, it's not as simple as like, hey, I send you a piece of mail, you send the contract back signed and we're off to the closing attorney. But in a lot of ways, it can be more lucrative because people will do deals with people they like. The cold call is where that's a big part of what I didn't like about me doing cold calling. And because like there is a lot that it can be very time intensive, not just the dialing and the thing, but like these conversations, like you get somebody on the phone that just wants to talk. And you don't know at the beginning of that conversation, like, is this going to turn into a good lead or am I wasting the next 10 minutes of my life listening to this person? And then it's like, no. So, that played a big factor in me wanting to outsource, to be frank, because if somebody else is doing that and I just get to see a warm lead on the other side, and now this lead is potentially turning into a contract, I'm much more inclined to give my more valuable time to that conversation. But I mean, it's the name of the game in this, in specifically in this like lead gen method. Like, you need to be ready to talk to people. If you're doing your own cold calling, you need to be a conversationalist, that's for sure.
So what do you ask? What do you when you're cold calling, what do you collect for that initial call? We don't need to role play here, but if somebody wanted to attempt this themselves and explore cold calling and kind of go through that, you know, path and understand what it's all about, you know, what would you suggest for somebody to ask, and what do you do on that initial call?
Great question. Because I see this with people that get into cold calling for the first time and they want to treat it as like a letter. More like a letter that gets read on the phone, more or less, right? Like, they first of all want to tell their life story, everything about their business. Oh, you know, we close fast, we do all cash, we'll pay your closing costs. Like, kind of like, you know, whatever they've spent all this time like coming up with, like, this is the great letter, like, this is just, oh, that's my script for a cold call. No, not the case. Somebody that is getting a letter is opening it and reading it at a time of their choosing when they have the time to do so. That's not what's happening with a cold call. You are, by definition, calling them out of the blue and talking to them about maybe a property they haven't thought of in a long time, or it may be a pretty inopportune time, like they're trying to drop kids off for school or whatever it is. So you've got to get to the point. You've got to immediately establish who you are, why you're calling, in the first 5 seconds of the call. So, you know, hey, this is Joe Roberts. I'm a land buyer in North Carolina. I was calling about your property in Macon County. I'm looking to buy properties in this area. Do you have any interest in selling? Like, you are making a statement that you want to buy their property within the first few seconds of that call. Because A, it's more efficient for your time. if they are immediately not interested. And then B, it's more, you are more likely to generate a positive response when you're not wasting their time up front. So that's the first thing, is you got to get straight to the point. The second thing is you've got to understand that you don't need to get all this, like, you don't need to completely qualify a lead in your first call. That's another thing that we see, like a land caller, because we build, you know, essentially every client is in some way, their script is customized. You know, we have standard questions and stuff, but I would say more than half of our scripts have quite a few customizations to fit their specific strategy that they're looking for. And what we see a lot is people come in, they're like, okay, here's like the 15 questions I want asked of every lead before it gets into my CRM. And it's just, it's not a good way of doing, it's not good for this lead gen method, because right. rarely does somebody have the time when we're calling them or the inclination to go answer 15 questions about a property, right? And you're asking them about, you know, oh, does, you know, when was the last perk test? Have you had it perk tested? You know, is it, you know, all these due diligence questions, first of all, lots of which can be done by a VA with internet access, you know, with a couple minutes of research. So you really want to stick to, like, you want to aim for like 3 to 5 minutes on your first call. That's kind of the sweet spot. Obviously, you'll get those talkative folks that are going to keep you on longer. Mm-hmm. But if you shoot that for that as your goal, you're going to capture the most amount of potential leads for the people that just don't have the time right then, or they're just an impatient type of person, as you know. So what that looks like, it's about 4 or 5 questions. So you want to be pretty 4 to 6 questions. You want to be pretty choosy about what you're deciding is valuable information on that first call. What I've found is more valuable than simple due diligence questions is questions, open-ended questions that kind of get them talking, that give me clues into either their motivation level, their pain points, and or anything that I can use in negotiations later on. So like getting them to give you a number first, right? That's like negotiations 101, is get the other side to say a number first. So that's a question in my, you know, standard cold call, is like, what are you hoping to get for this property? So it already arms me for potential follow-up calls with a number if I can get that.
So you collected some of that information, and then how do you get them to move forward? Do you book for another call? Do you ask for another time where you can talk more about it? What's typically the way that you can sort of secure the next call?
Yeah, booking again is kind of hit or miss in terms of like getting them to agree to, yeah, you know, let's book a call for tomorrow afternoon. I mean, that's definitely, I would say you have the most likely chance of having that call, but the least likely chance of them agreeing to like your specific time on the call. So what we typically do is just, okay, thanks for the information. We're going to take this and try to generate an offer. If we have any other questions, we'll give you a call back, or we'll call back with an offer. How does, you know, or what is a good time in the next day or two for you? Or right. do you have a preferred time callback? They say, okay, yeah, you know, afternoons, anytime. Like, okay, great. I'll make a note of that. We'll give you a call back in the afternoon in the next day or two. Expect that to come from a, you know, XYZ area code or something like that. So right. good way to kind of set expectations for rough time of day and date, but you don't have to lock yourself in case maybe due diligence takes a little bit extra long, and then set expectations so that they kind of know what area code you're going to be calling back from is also a good method.
Awesome. Thank you for breaking that all down and, you know, sharing some of your insights and experiences with how you go about, especially that initial cold call and, you know, how do you move over to the next step? Now, what would you say is something you learned, you know, that you never realized about cold calling that you, you know, came around to learning about? Is there something that sort of took you by surprise as you were sort of getting started, or, you know, a few months down the road, did something unlock, did some sort of realization, any surprises?
Yeah, I guess one kind of surprise or realization that I don't think I had before is that, so there's this idea that, you know, you can't create motivation, that you can only catch people at the right time. What like, has
you can't create like, motivation, but you got to catch them at the right time.
Yeah, well, that's the idea, right? Yeah. But what I've discovered over the last year is that that's not entirely true. I would say that that's still obviously the majority of situations. But what I've discovered is that like you can create motivation in that like you can plant seeds and you get to bear the fruit that comes from that seed planted when you can establish a relationship with somebody. And you can, maybe you don't, somebody says, well, you're not creating motivation. Okay. Maybe I'm not, but I'm getting them to a point where they had no intention of selling and now they're selling to me. So to me, that is kind of creating motivation. Or it's at least creating a deal where motivation didn't previously exist. And so, you know, we've seen really good success with, much better success with our follow-ups because than we did with mail because we've talked to these people on the phone and we planted seeds and, you know, there's an aspect of like, yeah, you know, actually you're right. I haven't thought about that property in 2 years and I'm not doing anything with it and I am paying taxes. And then who are they going to start talking to about it? Well, the person that's already on the phone with them and the person that's following up with them on a regular basis that they've already talked to on the phone. So I would say that that's kind of like the lesson that I've come to gather over the past year that, you know, as a younger land flipper or previously where it was like, yeah, like you just got to catch them at the right time, right place. And if you're lucky enough to be there, then, and you're the, you know, the first one in the door, then, you know, you could get the deal. Whereas like, I think it's a little bit specific to cold calling because there's that personal connection. Like, you don't really have a personal connection with like, you know, a phone number that appears in an SMS on your phone. And it's like, okay, so what? He said, it's Joe Roberts and I'm a local land buyer. Like you don't care. Right. Like it doesn't matter. And you're not going to remember that they texted you. But if you and I have had maybe two or three conversations about your land and you're not ready to, you know, we don't go under contract this month, but I follow up in 2 months and I follow up in 3 or 4 months, like, I am putting deals under contract in January right now that we first made contact in May, June, July. Right. And you know, so that's a long way of kind of and convoluted way of saying, I don't think that the old mantra of you can't create motivation is necessarily true.
Awesome. I want to dive into a little bit of the numbers. Just kind of getting an understanding. I mean, the question I had written down here was like, on average, how long is that call? You mentioned you like to keep that first initial call between 3 to 5 minutes, get what you need, and then get back to them after with that offer. But the, let's say the follow-up calls after that, I mean, do the times typically vary? I mean, when you're sort of managing somebody who wants to do cold calling, you know, what do you sort of put down a limit as to how long people can talk, or do you encourage lengthier talks? And what does it look like on average?
On average, it's a little bit longer, but it also depends on how much we've been able to do in due diligence. And it depends a lot on the seller themselves. So a lot about this business is being able to adjust to the type of person you're talking to on the fly, you know, so good. Very good social skills are extremely valuable when all your negotiations are taking place and discussions are taking place over the phone. So I would say it tends a little bit longer, but it could also be shorter. It could be like, hey, we've got two or three quick due diligence questions to ask. This person is not really a chatty person. They, you know, they might be a motivated seller and they might really want to sell. They're just not the type of person that wants to spend 10 minutes on the phone with a stranger. So you get to the point. So on average, it's probably seven minutes or so. I don't put any limit on myself or anybody else. Ultimately, if there's a deal to be had at the end of it, if it's like pretty clear that like, okay, this is not, we're going to be too far apart on price. Like, yeah, we try to wrap it up. But if I see a potential deal, like, yeah, I'll stay on the phone. That's going to set me apart from the guy sending them mail three times a year. So.
Sure. So doing the math here, average calls per hour, we're looking like you probably do 20 calls an hour for the cold calling side of things. Is that right? 15, 20?
Yeah. I'm trying to think of like, there's a big difference between doing this yourself and doing this.
Yeah.
Like with a professional cold caller. Right. So, yeah. Because, a dialer using a power dialer, and somebody who's just going, you know, next call, next call, next call versus, yeah. You know, you're picking up your handset and you're dialing in, even if you've got a skip trace list in front of you, software obviously makes things faster. So yeah, I mean, I would say probably when I was doing it, I was probably averaging like 10 calls an hour or something around there. But yeah, 20 calls an hour is definitely, well within the realm of what a professional cold caller should be doing. I mean, our cold callers in our call centers are typically having between 200 and 400 contacts per day. So that's somebody who picks up the phone. Now that could be for 5 seconds. They're like, right. I'm not interested in putting it down, or right. it could be a 10 minute conversation, but they're talking to a person 200 to 400 times a day in that range.
Not really cold calling, but in terms of follow-up, like on average, how much follow-up do you see in order to say closing the deal? Just on average, a number that you can pull out of your head. Is there any number?
I mean, maybe 1.8 something, somewhere between 1 and 2 calls is probably the average you get. It depends on your strategy. Like as we've gotten more comfortable, my team, my land business team with cold call leads, you know, we're much more adept and agile at adapting to the person we're on the phone with. So if we feel like we come armed to the very first conversation, ready with an offer, right. but we don't necessarily give it unless it really seems like they want it, or B, it seems like it might be difficult to get back in touch with them if we've had a hard time getting back in touch with them despite kind of setting those expectations. Mm. But I mean, there's those deals that I've got a deal that I was just telling somebody about this earlier today. I think we made contact with this lady at the end of November. I really want this deal. There's about $150,000 to be made here. And she just won't sign the contract. We've agreed verbally. Every week is a different excuse. Maybe I'll never get signed. But at this point, if she's going to sell it anyway, it's going to be to me, because like we're basically friends now. I know all of her kids' names. Like I know where they live, and it's just like, yeah, once a week, once every other week, it's give a call. Hey, how you doing? Yeah, great. You know, you ready to sign? No. Okay. Well, how are the kids doing? And, you know, so I mean, that one, we're probably honestly on call like 15 or something. Wow. But there's a big payoff at the end if I could get that deal under contract. Right, so, right. Yeah,
that's so funny. What should people expect in terms of cost per lead?
cost per lead is going to be above. It's going to be more expensive than texting.
Yeah,
I think it's a higher quality lead than texting. Yep. It's going to be a lot cheaper than mail. Mm-hmm. Cost per lead is going to vary really widely depending on how you set this up, right? So when I'll use Landcaller as like an external agency example. So our cost per lead is typically about 60 to 65% cost savings over a similar sized list of mail. And so, you know, it comes out to around 30 cents per lead. That's all in with data and every like pulling the records and everything else. Wow. The doing it yourself, you obviously gain, you can make that a little bit cheaper, but not a whole lot cheaper if you want to like really like do it with like the software, right? So like a power dialer, you know, a good skip tracer. Skip tracing matters so much in this business. Making sure you're doing a TCPA scrub to keep yourself, you know, protected, that sort of thing. So, there's some costs that you're never going to get cheaper doing it, you know, some kind of a floor to it. But I would say if you're doing it yourself, maybe you get that down to 25 cents ish, potentially, a record per record. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of like per record contacted. And then the lead flow tends to be about the same that you see from direct mail. So, you know, 10,000 records, we average about at Landcaller about 70 to 75 leads off of an initial list of right around 10,000 records, but that's after those records have been skipped. So there's, you know, a certain percentage there that don't ever get contacted, but just like mail, there's a certain percentage that never get delivered. So, right. And it's a similar percentage. So,
right. Okay. So one of the things about Joe is that he has come through and come onto my radar because he joined the Dirt Hacker Challenge last year. And the Dirt Hacker Challenge is a 5-day challenge with myself on really going through the framework and building a blueprint of how do you put your business on autopilot, getting processes in place. How do we hire? How do we grow? How do we scale? This has nothing to do with tech, but everything to do with getting clarity on your business and getting processes behind that. And this is what I run every month. It's called the Dirt Hacker Challenge. In fact, if you head over to dirthackerchallenge.com, sort of make this a bit of a no-brainer for you. Check it out. I run this every month. And again, Joe was part of this early on when I ran it back in 2023. I'm still running this. I've improved on it so much more since then. And so if you're interested in understanding, even as a solopreneur, how do I start planning for the upcoming months of when I bring my first hire on, when I start documenting things for my team? How do I actually do that? How do I build processes? You've seen it done with, you know, tech businesses all the way down to things like McDonald's and Starbucks. They are able to scale because they built in repeatable processes. So I run this every month. Head over to dirthackerchallenge.com. If you want to join it, it happens every month. It's a 5-day challenge, 1 hour every day. Make this no-brainer. So check it out. Head over to dirthackerchallenge.com. Anyways, let's continue this show here with Joe Roberts. You mentioned a few times, and just for listeners, so they understand, what is a power dialer? And can you give people an example who want to perhaps try it themselves and see what cold calling is about? What is a power dialer, and do you have an example of one?
Yeah, so a power dialer is just a software that allows you to cold call at scale. So as opposed to, you know, your Google Voice number, your open phone number, where you're, you know, you're tapping in each number and then putting, you know, calling. A power dialer is just a calling software. Mm-hmm. There's certain things that you have to have in it in order to stay compliant with the TCPA if you know, for that. But what it essentially allows you to do is to upload a list. And although a person still controls it, you can just dial a lot faster. So some of the examples are like Call Tools, Ready Mode, are these softwares that that allow you to essentially work through numbers a lot quicker. It's not completely automatic. There's still a person there controlling it, but it is a lot more efficient than like an open phone.
Gotcha. Okay. Stepping towards you, what's it like to run a land business and a land calling service, or just a service business, running multiple businesses? What's that like?
Jesse, I should be asking you this. I think you know exactly what it's like. So first of all, it's very nice in the sense that like it's my one business was built to support my other business. So they're complementary, and it allows me to focus in the same industry basically in complementary ways. Right. Because as I'm discovering things in my land business, I'm applying those lessons learned back over to my Landcaller and vice versa. I'm also able to, you know, give those insights to our clients and everything else. Mm-hmm. My land business has not grown nearly as quickly as it could have if I had not spent. I mean, I have a partner with Landcaller, 50-50 partner. He's the COO, so he's more the day-to-day, obviously, stuff. And so I definitely could not have grown Landcaller by myself without him. I mean, that's a given. Right. But Landcaller definitely took up a majority of my time. I was able to do that, though. And I mean, my land business did 7 figures this year, so it's not something to scoff at. It's, you know, it's definitely not on the you know, probably most of your guests are doing a lot more volume in their land business than I do. But I was, for especially since I didn't get out of the Marine Corps till April, I was very happy with seven figures in 2023. I wouldn't have been able to get to seven figures there had I not, you know, established a team, systems and processes, good CRM. Yeah. Shout out to Pebble. Still use it even though I don't mail anymore. It's a great CRM. And, you know, been able to kind of gain some efficiencies with Landcaller being the one providing my land company leads. Moving into 2024, as Landcaller is kind of maturing and we're, you know, hiring out for more positions, promoting from within, and I'm able to kind of take a small step away, I, you know, will focus hopefully back on my land business and continue to grow it. But my land business more or less just kind of ran on autopilot in 2023 I didn't really do much like expansion.
So there you have it, guys. Those of you guys listening, you know, trying to get your land business up and going and thinking, hey, can I actually do this? Look at Joe. He has built his land business, killed it last year, and is not only killing that, but also killing his service business as well, or also focusing on something else as well. So amazing, amazing, amazing. That's such a crazy win, and congrats on that, Joe. I genuinely mean that, because it's not easy to run one business.
No, it's not.
Kudos to you for that. I admire that very much. Okay, I got a couple more questions here for you. I want to talk a little bit about your service, and so how can people engage with you? So landcaller.com, they can find you there. Is it specifically only for land? Can they use it for houses? Can they use it for other things?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. So when you get down to it, cold calling is cold calling. All of our cold callers, we don't hire them unless they have previous real estate cold calling experience. Wow. So we have a caller that is guaranteed. We have multiple callers that have done whatever asset class you're wanting. We don't advertise that necessarily. Mm. We do call for other asset types. Yeah. It's almost exclusively somebody who we're calling for their land campaign, and they're like, hey, I also do houses, or I also want to buy a self-storage facility this year. And so rather than have, you know, a client have to go search elsewhere for another, it's like, hey, we can do that for sure. So, but we want to stay honest to our roots, because we built this because it didn't exist in the land community. And we felt like there was a need for it. And there was, you know, the land investor community is a small community, but it's a lot of very passionate people. And I mean, you know, as building a CRM built for land investors, it's cool to be able to just build something for the people that you interact with in this industry. So yes, we'll call for other stuff. It's easy to do. We have a caller, I'm sure, for any asset class, but we are first and foremost vacant land. And that's where we focus. That's, you know, almost all of our training is focused towards getting leads in that space.
That's so awesome. Now, I'm sure you have a process of how you get people in, but before that, I want people to know, I want to know a little bit more about you, Joe. I know we spoke last year and we kind of touched bases at the end of the last year as well. And so I have this thing called the quickfire round. So I'm going to give you some questions here. I'd love to learn a little bit more about Joe, the guy behind Landcaller, the land investor. You mentioned you have five kids. Holy smokes. I don't know how you do it. You got out of the Marine Corps.
We homeschool too.
Outside of land, what do you like doing? Outside of business, outside of work and land, anything land related, what do you like doing?
So anything outdoors, hunting, fishing, or hiking are huge, huge loves of mine. Anything with my kids, we homeschool our kids, so we get to kind of do a lot with them. I love to travel. So 2023, the majority of the year, we've been on the road in a fifth wheel traveling around the U.S. So I think we've been to, so we left North Carolina. I got out of the Marine Corps in April. We left North Carolina in May. We've got a 43-foot fifth wheel. We've been to 25 something states so far, all around the U.S., just on the road, staying in campgrounds. So love to travel. Love to be outdoors.
You are living the life, Joe. You are living the life. You are, wow, you are making probably a lot of people salivate. And the freedom, it's so funny, the freedom that you've crafted for yourself and doing what you love. So, okay, what's your biggest pet peeve?
Biggest pet peeve is just lack of follow through, I would say. Like, as a Marine, like, everything is, you know, you say you're going to do it, you get it done.
Yeah.
And so whether that's, you know, obviously everybody falls to that own temptation. So whether that's within myself when I recognize it, employees, potential clients, like, just, I like things to come to conclusion, whether that's like, right, a yes, a no, I couldn't get it done because of this, but just follow through. That's, you know, for me and myself, like, I have a lot of things going on, clearly. Like, so I have to catch myself too, is like, am I capable of following through on everything that I've committed to, whether that's my family, my businesses, and everything else.
Sure. I love that one. What is a bad habit you're working on?
I mean, I would say it kind of dovetails off that last point of like shiny object syndrome, like wanting to do too much and stretching myself too thin. So a bad habit is I get something to a phase where it's like, it's running well. And then it's like, I've got the next thing, right? It's like, all right, what's next? And so I need to learn to like take some time to just, you know, take some wins, rest, refit, and then before moving out on something else. So,
got you. One more here. Do you read? I've got a book question.
Yeah, I read a lot.
Okay, so if you can recommend one book that you've read recently, what would it be and why?
Man, that's a good question. I mean, first of all, I mean, this is like not a business book or anything. It's just fantastic literature. It's probably my favorite book is Count of Monte Cristo. And if you want to like draw some good business or like life advice from that book, it's, you know, the importance of like perseverance, you know, so that's my favorite book of all time. I'm reading it again now. And, it's a fantastic piece of literature. It's obviously complete fiction, but, some great stuff in there. Awesome. In terms of, business books I've read, I'm in the process of finishing E-Myth again, right now, because, you know, that's always a good one to kind of reread and reorient yourself as things grow and you move into different phases of business and life and stuff. So,
I love that one too. Awesome. Joe, who would you recommend to have on this podcast and why? You see, this is how I get my guests.
Who would I recommend to have on your podcast? Oh, man. I mean, I feel like your bench has been really impressive. I mean, the land community is pretty small. So at some point you start to definitely run out of people that are just at least just focused on land. Man,
nobody comes to mind. It's not a big deal, but,
I'm just trying to think of somebody you haven't had. Cause like every time I come up with a name, it's like, oh no, they've been on there. So, you have had JT Olmstead.
Oh my gosh, this is going to be embarrassing. I've talked to JT quite a bit, and I think we're trying to line him up.
All right. Well, if you haven't had JT, then you need JT.
Yeah. I finally got to meet him out in Korea last year. But yeah, an awesome, awesome guy.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. I think that was recommended a few times, and I feel like I've had JT on already. So JT, if I had you on, I'm so sorry. I don't these things. I do so many that I now I'm on so many calls, but I feel like I haven't actually had you on yet. But
if you haven't, also, I mean, JT always seems to be the type of guy that's like pushing the envelope. So even if you had him on, he's probably doing something new or has some new insight. Right. So
exactly.
And Your Land Loans is obviously a fantastic resource.
Yes. I think that's what we're supposed to talk about. Thanks for reminding me on that one. Awesome. Well, you've been awesome to interview. Again, Joe, how can they reach out to you? Is it just head over to landcaller.com? What should they expect as the next step here?
Yeah. I mean, if you're interested in outsourcing cold calling as a lead gen method, landcaller.com, you can get on there, learn a little bit more about us. You can book a call, For now and for the foreseeable future, you're going to be booking a call with me, because I like to know all of our clients and, you know, put a face to a name. And we're very focused on building. It's not for the masses. It's going to be, you know, we're focused on building a very customized experience to professional land operators who understand the value we bring in terms of regular, consistent lead flow, people that know the industry, people that use our own product and stand behind it. So for that reason, you know, we're very involved. You know, every client gets a dedicated Slack channel and I'm in that channel so they can reach out to me at any time. So yeah, if you're interested in chatting about how we could potentially do lead gen for you, landcaller.com, and you can book a call on there.
Awesome. Joe, thank you so much for hopping on a call with me here and sharing your journey and what you've done and all the success you've had. And I hope that really inspires others to see that this is a very possible to build a dream lifestyle and also buy a giant RV and drive around the country.
That's right. It is possible. Absolutely. Thanks, Jesse.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
Before you stop this episode or hit the next episode, I want to personally thank you for listening to this episode of the Land Investing Business Secrets podcast by Pebble. If you found this helpful, we greatly appreciate any awesome reviews and ratings on whichever platform you are listening to this on. And if you have 2 minutes and wanted to step it up even more and help others, feel free to share this in other Facebook groups or pages or any communities, giving others a heads up of the Land Investing Business Secrets podcast or the specific episode that may help them on their land investing journey. Once again, thanks so much for listening and catch you on our next episode.